My parents had a very weird kind of money perception.
You might recognize the voice of food critic Charles Ferruza.
My mother was from a small town in Indiana, but she was from a wealthy family in a small town. And my father was the son of very, very poor Sicilian immigrants. How they ever got together, I do not know. Money was always an issue because my father was a good provider and he brought in a lot of money and for the 50s and 60s. But my mother spent like she was still a rich girl. And so there were always arguments about money. I think it really skewed my feeling about money because I saw that it could cause antagonism between relationships. And I went to work pretty early, so I started, you know, becoming a saver pretty early. But then I also have that, you know, side of my mother that when I want something, sometimes I don't think and I spend it on something really dumb.
Charles is not alone. If we really watch ourselves when we do weird things with money, and let's face it, we all do weird things with money, there is a good chance that we'll catch a flicker of recognition from childhood. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today on Central Standard, we're going to talk about how upbringing shapes our behavior around money later in life, even when circumstances have changed dramatically. Call 816-235-2888 to share your stories and get advice on how to adapt to your real grown-up finances right now in 2014. Do you follow an inherited script or do you behave in reaction to how money was handled in your childhood? 816-235-2888. I'd like to introduce this morning's guests before getting too deep into my own uninformed theories on this subject. Lucas Butchell of KHC Wealth Management. Good morning.
Good morning.
And David Jackson of Waddell & Reed Financial Advisors. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
So in a little while, we'll bring in a financial literacy trainer. But for now, I wonder what you financial advisors here in the room have to say about this. Do you often see clients whose financial instincts are related more to some long-gone past reality than present-day circumstances?
Yeah, I think we all have, you know, our habits from our past. I'm dealing with a client right now who came from a really tough upbringing, and he has been a really good saver. He just has that in his DNA, and he's retired now, and he did a really good job. And I've been encouraging him to start spending his money and enjoying it because otherwise he's going to leave a nice little lump sum to his son who's just going to blow it.
Wait, so you're confident that the son is going to blow it, and this is because the son hasn't grown up with those instincts,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. I met the son, and I know what he'll do unless he comes to me and I can, you know, really discipline him. But dad is just fearful of spending his money, and he's got enough where he'll be okay.
That's so sad, too, because it's like he's worked hard and he can't enjoy the comfort he's given himself.
Yeah, he's not the first client I've run into with that problem, though. I mean, you know, sometimes when you have that discipline built in, you can't let it go. You know, you feel like I'm always supposed to save every dime possible and I have to be really, really careful. He's at the point in life where he should be allowing himself to enjoy some of the fruits of his labor, like you said, and he just can't do it. Can't let go.
Lucas, how do you see these childhood scenarios playing out in your clients' financial decision making?
You know, I see it with almost every client we have. One of the things we do with some of our initial questionnaires and meetings is we'll explore that with clients. We'll talk about their upbringing, some of the money messaging and lessons that they've learned from their parents. And we hear some really interesting stories about you know, kind of roles between spouses, which we heard in the intro, which is very common, as well as, you know, people that grow up really poor and some of the things that that they do, kind of fears around money or the kind of relationship with money is completely bred when they're in those formative years growing up. And clearly your family and your parents have a big influence on those years. So it's oftentimes ghosts of your parents that you bring with you in terms of your money habits, your money values, and ultimately your money fears.
Can you break down some of the fears, some of the specific ways that fears come into the picture when you're talking about people who have grown up under more difficult circumstances than they have now? Like, what are some things that you might encourage them to do where you'd encounter resistance?
You know, I think to David's point, some of it is being able to spend and enjoy the dollar. So, you know, if you have somebody that grew up really poor and they've become successful, a lot of times there's a fear of never having enough, of not being able to store enough away because, you know, that the doom is just around the corner. And I think, you know, that comes from the job loss with dad when they were a kid or you know, some sort of a business that failed, that you know, they went from having money to not having any. Just that fear of some sort of uncontrollable event that will take everything from them. So they kind of hoard those dollars and won't let themselves enjoy the money that they've created.
On the other hand, I have a friend, I won't name her, but she grew up under difficult circumstances where, like, the power would be turned off and things like that. And she is, as an adult, an incredibly shrewd business person, and talks about how she grew up with her power being turned off. That's never, ever going to happen to her as an adult. And it's really shaped her into this incredibly astute and I don't know, she won't give herself any leeway, but that's part of how she's gotten where she is.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So she's using it as a motivating factor to drive her success. I think that is the secret to it is becoming aware of kind of why am I wired the way I am. So that self-awareness, kind of reflecting on what is my upbringing, what gifts have my parents given me, and what demons have they bestowed to me as well. So the first step is the awareness. And then I think you can kind of see how it influences you, whether that's good or bad, and then ultimately take some either corrective action or just knowing yourself and allowing yourself to do different things, or giving yourself permission to do different things, knowing that you may be influenced by the way you were brought up.
So you mentioned that in conversations with clients, stories about childhood and upbringing and how money was in their youth comes up. Does that just come up naturally? They bring that up? That's like a normal part of someone talking through finances?
No, I don't think it is, unless you create the space for it. So that's why I mentioned, when we have a new client, we go there and we ask questions about that, because it really does allow those conversations to happen. You know, as with most folks, some are very willing to open up and share when you ask the questions, and some aren't willing to go there until they've built a level of trust, because some of them can be pretty tough memories.
Are people ever just like never willing to go there?
I've run into that before too. But you know, it's kind of interesting how this segment that we're doing is kind of framed as financial therapy, because so much of what we do with our clients is in a sense therapy. You know, it's like helping them to understand how money works, and not just the dollars and cents side of things, but, you know, how do you handle money? How do you react to money?
Do you put tissues by the table side?
I had a client actually complain that I did not have tissue. I said, David, you should know better. You should have tissue here all the time.
Well, okay. So speaking of, I mentioned my own uninformed theories. I have a theory having to do with parents and upbringing in general, and I'd like your opinion on whether it applies to finances. My theory is that there are two kinds of people in the world. There are the people who look at their parents' example and think, now that's how it's done. And then there are the people who treat the past more like a cautionary tale. They think back on their parents' decisions and try to do the opposite. Is this basically how it breaks down in your office?
Yeah, but I don't know if I could say if there's a tendency one way or the other. But yeah, you do see that. You know, some people, I'll never do it that way because I saw that was so jacked up. And some people take it the other way. If I want to be just like them, and you know, and I'm thinking what Lucas was talking about, the opposite side of that. Somebody comes from a fairly well-to-do upbringing, and all of a sudden they find themselves in difficult situations, having to now adapt to, oh, I have to really be disciplined. But my parents never were with money.
Let's
I need to
flesh that out, because I think a lot of people might imagine that growing up with a really like solid financial foundation would be sort setting you up for the best in life. But it sounds like that comes with its own pitfalls.
Yeah, you know, and I've read a couple of different articles talking about the baby boom generation that I'm a part of. We were terrible parents in the fact that we wanted to give our kids everything. And our attitude was, if Johnny wants it, Johnny's going to get it. We're just going to make sure it happens, even if we have to go in debt. So then Johnny grows up thinking, yeah, if I want it, I should have it, and I should have it right now. And so I run into kids right out of college, fresh out of college, who think, yeah, I deserve a brand new car right now. You know, and me, myself, I did not get my first brand new car until I was in my mid-30s. I never thought I could afford it until I was in my mid-30s.
And a new car is just automatically going to depreciate in value within minutes.
Exactly. You know, so, you know, a lot of the kids grow up today thinking, no, I deserve all this stuff because my parents always let me have it. And, you know.
Hey, we see that a lot as well. And I think the parents, sometimes to a fault, kind of want to create this perfect life or perfect childhood for their kids. And a lot of the lessons we learn in life come through struggle and having to kind of work through problems and figure things out on our own. Parents that have, do well for themselves, make good money, kind of want to take care of their kids. And I think that's a natural parent instinct. And some of the things that we've seen, for example, is a child going through, getting an opportunity to go to college, parents funding that, make a choice to, become a teacher or a social worker, which are great professions, great career choices. But having the right expectations then at the level of income you're going to be earning in those professions, they were used to a certain lifestyle growing up that career choice probably won't provide for.
Is there any real way to prepare someone for those kinds of expectations other than having experienced it? Because you can think really abstractly like, yes, I am a noble individual who will sacrifice some comfort to do this wonderful thing. And then you don't know what that feels like.
I think there are. I think some of it is even if you have money as parents, still making your kids struggle for things. So it helps kind of teach them the value of a dollar. So whether that's making them buy, some of their clothes or some of their entertainment, or working to buy that first car, or at least part of it. I think so. Teaching them hard work or work equals money or dollars, and then how far those dollars go. I think ultimately you're right, and especially it's hard to say to an 18-year-old, make this career choice and understand the consequences down the road. But I think if they can appreciate the value of a dollar and understand how much things cost, then I think that they're better equipped to help evaluate those choices as they get into college.
Let's get into a few specifics, because this is like a pretty broad idea of how money works and whether you get it or not. But let's start with something specific like savings. Is savings a learned behavior with day-to-day habits that contribute to allowing you to save that need to be modeled?
I think so. I think it's, when you get money, the natural inclination is to spend it. That's like they got tons of commercials that tell you how to part with your money.
There's all kinds of stuff out there.
Yeah, there's so much stuff, and we want that stuff. So I think you have to be kind of trained and educated that saving for a rainy day or just saving to build towards your future is a noble and justifiable thing that needs to be built in,
Is there a way to teach that to someone who hasn't grown up having to do it or even with an awareness that someone was doing it for them?
Well, I think, like you mentioned, I think experience is the best teacher. And I think, when people find, hey, I've been making really decent money, but now I need something. There's an emergency and I don't have anything. That kind of puts that seed, that plants that seed. But it's better to start teaching it as a child. You get your allowance, you give a child an allowance and say, put some of that money aside because you may want to build, build this up to buy something big that you really want. I think it needs to start with the parent, but it doesn't always do that.
How about something like charitable giving? I know that isn't an option for everyone, but at a certain level, the difference between someone who gives to philanthropic causes and someone who doesn't may not have much to do with income. It might have more to do with whether that's a part of your financial worldview, because unlike paying bills or having something for an emergency, giving to a cause is not necessary.
Correct. And I think it's absolutely modeled behavior. And I think there are ways to do it, even if you have a low income. So, one of the things I think I've talked about on the show before is with our kids, we have three piggy banks. They have a share piggy bank that that they put money in and they give to charity or you participate in causes that are important to them. A save bucket. So that's, where they put money aside for saving for things that they want to buy. And then saving for college as well, so a college funding, so that future putting money aside. And, it's an opportunity to say, okay, when my dad empties his change, you divide it up between these three. And then with my oldest son, we just did a Toys for Tots thing. So had an opportunity where he got to take $10 out of his share piggy bank. We went and bought a toy, and he had an opportunity to take it to an event where it was given to kids in need. So it was a good teaching moment. That doesn't have to be very much money to have that lesson. And my hope is that eventually he'll remember that and that'll become part of his psyche and ultimately what he chooses to do when he gets older.
It comes to mind, I was sitting down with a client once and reviewing their budget. And I was looking at their, what was going out. And I was noticing things were really, really tight and they had a lot of debt. And I actually suggested that maybe they reduce how much they were giving to charity. And I was reprimanded so severely that I've been resistant to do that with anybody else since then. It's like, no, I'm going to do this. So
it's an obligation.
Yeah, some people feel that way. Like, yeah, this is untouchable. And, you know, if that's how you feel, then that's what you should do.
Do you have other people who theoretically want to be philanthropic but really struggle to part with it?
Oh, yes, I do. You know, I think, money is a series of choices. And, you know, we have our values and we have our needs and we have our wants. And we have to make decisions with our dollars. And, you know, sometimes people say, well, I really wish I could. But no, I've got to do these other things, too. And, you know, it ends up on the bottom of the list.
We're not just shaped, at least in my perception, by our childhoods in this respect, but also by our very early careers, the sort of slim Campbell soup years. Something that I struggle with from that time is that, you know, I learned to pay as little as possible for things in the here and now. I trained myself very well to do that. It's hard to rewire the message in your brain to acknowledge that sometimes paying more now is the wiser financial decision, to just internalize that lesson. I'm still working on it, clearly.
Yeah, I think that's something that you can definitely draw from and experience. And it's a really good lesson, though, is you know, sometimes there's things that are worth paying for and spending money. So much of it is, at least in our society, gets thrown out as black and white, you should or you shouldn't. And really, it's a matter of degrees. And there's really opportunities in all facets to do different things in moderation. So that's the biggest thing is trying to allow yourself permission to do that. And that we've come up with some strategies that actually allow people to do that and try to give them permission to spend money or do certain things or enjoy some of the finer things if they have the capability to do so.
Yeah, my wife is one of the perfect examples. She loves to thrift shop, and she will go to places that, you know, I'm not going to mention, you know, to find a bargain. And
you're keeping her secret
safe.
Yeah,
yeah. And she could afford to shop at the really nicest stores if she wanted to, but she chooses to look for the deep, deep, deep discounts. And I love her for it.
Because once you know you can find them, why would you pay more?
Yeah.
But what about couples? When you advise couples in their shared finances, do you find that different financial backgrounds need to be negotiated?
That's probably one of the most challenging aspects of our jobs as financial advisors is dealing with couples. Because, you know, the most extreme is where you have one who's a spender and one who's a saver. And that conversation just gets so volatile at times. And so we find ourselves playing referee in a lot of occasions where, well, you know, it's okay to spend some, but, you know, and, you know, but you don't want to take sides in that, you know, in that conversation between couples. You don't want to take sides.
Yeah, I think I agree with David that is a big challenge, and especially because, you know, most people have different experiences coming up, you know, trying to help them kind of negotiate that and make it so they both feel heard and have the opportunity to contribute to the family financial situation, but also have them be able to accomplish what they're trying to do from a financial goal perspective.
Central Standard's going to take a quick break. When we return to this money therapy session, we'll bring a financial literacy expert in on the discussion, and we'll invite you to participate. Call 816-235-2888. Tell us how past experiences have shaped your financial habits for better or worse. 816-235-2888. And we're back. You're listening to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and we'd love for you to join this conversation. Call 816-235-2888 to tell us how your past has affected the way you make financial decisions today. That's 816-235-2888. I'm joined by Lucas Butchell and David Jackson of the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. There are money therapists here on Central Standard. And now it's my pleasure to bring Sophie Archuleta in on today's discussion. Hi, Sophie.
Hi, good morning.
So you're from a program called Reality U. Can you start off by explaining what that is?
Yeah, so Reality U or Reality University is a financial literacy program that is geared towards freshmen in high school. I like to explain it as an interactive game of life. So the students take a survey, let me know what they want their life to be like at 26. And then we take into account their current GPA, the career field that they would like to be in, and create this life profile. The day of the event, we have community volunteers who come in and man 14 different booths that represent expenses that you face as an adult. So housing, transportation, medical insurance, car insurance, student loans. We also have charitable giving, financial counseling, and the students have to take their profiles, their salaries, if they have families, and go around and make financial decisions at each booth.
So do they have situations where you say to them, okay, so now you've paid your bills, here's what's left, here's what your dinner table looks like? Does it get that specific?
So there's a grocery booth, so they're buying groceries and they get to see how much that costs. It's based on a month's worth of spending. So they get to go around and make all these financial decisions, and it's basically everything that you would face as an adult. And then they get to see at the end of that how much money they have left over or don't have left over. And then they also have the opportunity to put more into savings or, you know, kind of just let that roll over for next month, which is, you know, not really there. It's just for pretend. But they get to see where all of that money is going. They're making decisions at every booth. So they get to see what someone who, you know, spends more on more expensive clothing, they get to see how much that could cost as opposed to being more of a thrifty shopper, and how much they could be saving by being more of a thrifty shopper.
So. And then do they ever come back to you and say, I've changed my career decision altogether and start over in a different way?
They want to. Yeah, I mean, I get to hear a lot of fun and funny things from our students. A lot of them are, can I give my babies away?
Oh, no. Yikes. Well, I guess it's better to ask that question in school than in real life.
In real life, yeah. Yeah, it was really funny. We were in J.C. Harmon High School last week, and we had students, they actually have the babies, like the family planning babies that cry and you have to feed them. And so the students randomly got some of these babies and they're going through and the first thing I hear is, or they're like, well, can I just give it back? I'm like, you know, in real life, you cannot give your baby back.
Yeah. Well, and so are your students who you're working with coming from a really diverse range of backgrounds, or is it a pretty, is there a group of kids? Could you identify like who you're working with?
Yeah. In the beginning, we started out with our kind of lower income schools. A lot of the students are on free and reduced lunch, so they're coming from families in poverty. Was our initial reach. We're now kind of branching out to schools that just any schools that wants our program, because we feel that this information is important to all students, not just those from low income families.
So. It sounds to me like you basically stage an intervention right as people are exiting childhood and embarking on a lifetime of their own financial decisions and financial consequences,
right,
which gives you a unique window into what people carry with them, having not already done this, what ideas have been ingrained in their little minds that might benefit from a little revision or, as the case may be, a lot of revision. But what are that window? What does it show you?
So I do get to see kind of what they are learning at home. But then I also get to see that they are changing these decisions based on the choices that they have to make during the event. So we have students who say, you know, oh, I want three kids by the time I'm 26. They don't realize what that means financially for them. And so then they get to go around and see, oh, well, I have three kids. I have to pay for all this daycare, which means that I can't get that car that I wanted at the transportation booth. We're not going to be able to save as much as we thought we were, because they also tell me how much they want to be saving at 26. You know, we might not be able to buy the home that we wanted because we're spending so much money in all these other places. And so I get to see kind of the wheels turning as they're learning that, you know, just one little decision can affect every single aspect of their finances.
Is there a most common misperception that you work hard to correct pretty much everywhere you go?
I mean, students don't understand that, you know, they think 26 is so old. They're like, yeah, 26 now. And they don't understand that that they're not going to be making the amount of money that they think they will be at 26. And so our numbers aren't exact, and career fields are really broad. So we have about 13 to 14 career fields that they get to choose from. And so one example is health science. And with health science, you could be a CNA, you could be an MA, you could be a surgeon. And those salaries are going to vary widely. And the way we pinpoint, you know, what salary each student is going to get is based on their GPAs. And so one thing that we're showing them is that, you know, if you are making a 0.7 GPA right now, but you think you're going to be a doctor and make a doctor's salary, we're taking into account that GPA. You're going to get an MA's salary, and you're going to have to live off that. And so they're kind of getting that little lesson of, okay, well, I'm not going to be making the money I think I'm going to be making. And even at 26, even though you're going to school to be a doctor, you're not getting that doctor's salary yet. And I don't think that's something that they understand right now. Yeah.
You know, I don't mean to contradict what you, I'm sure, are very informed in, but my anecdotal experience is not that GPA correlates all that directly to how financially stable people are in their adult lives. And
right.
I would like to believe that that correlated a lot, but how much does it?
It's not a whole lot. So we are actually a dropout prevention organization. And so our first goal is to kind of encourage students to stay in school and graduate from high school. And the way we do it is through this financial literacy program where we show them, you know, if you stay on this trajectory, this is how you could end up. And that salary wise, that doesn't mean that they're going to be making the financial decisions that we think they are. I see the students making really wise decisions. And it varies from student to student as to kind of their students. I've seen them that they get through the entire situation scenario and they have $200 left over. And they're like, well, I still have $200. What can I spend this on? I'm going to go get a different car, get a newer, better car, and pay a little more each month for that. And then I'm going to go take a vacation. And they're like, until they have no money left. I'm like, that's no, you don't want to do that. But then we also have students who are like, oh, I have $500 left. I'm going to open up an IRA. I am going to put more into savings. And then I'm going to start paying a little bit more on my student loans each month.
Now, does this difference that you're pointing out, do extreme circumstances in the children's lives, are those reflected in the differences in those decisions? Like, and I'm talking both extreme wealth and extreme scarcity.
You know, I don't know where each student is coming from. And so I can't really answer that. But I do see it a wide range of students making different decisions. And so I do see those who are really frugal, and that could be from past experience from their parents, but I really don't have an idea.
Well, let's get Lucas Butchell and David Jackson back in on this discussion. Are the lessons Sophie teaches to adolescents the same ones that you're trying to reinforce with your clients, or are they different?
No, a lot of them are going to be very similar. So just hearing some of the cash flow conversations that you're really having is here's what's coming in, here's all the things that you have to pay, and then if there's money left over, where does it go? Or if you need money to be left over to save for the things you want to save for, how do we make that happen? So, I mean, it really is a series of choices. And you know, from a cash flow management and saving perspective, it's very similar.
Money seems to me to be very complicated. And when I have these conversations with you guys, it sounds in some ways like no matter how advanced a person's information about money is, the advice is still fairly simple and straightforward and something that we all should have mastered by the time we were 10. Am I just totally off base here, or is there a more complicated thing we're just not quite getting?
No, it's really simple. It's just pluses and minuses. You know, it's just basic math. But my mom was an educator. She was an educator most of her career. And she used to complain. One of the things that kids came out of school unprepared for was handling finances, because it's just not something that's taught. So I admire the fact that you guys are going into the high schools and teaching this stuff, because most people come out unprepared for handling, you know, those kind of issues. I give you a perfect example. I was dealing with a young youngster. He was 18 and inherited about almost $500,000. And he came from a poor family. So he had no concept of money. And all of a sudden, he's got all this money. And it took him less than a year to blow $500,000 because he didn't understand that, you know, he could have lived off the interest or he could save for a rainy day, or he just knew he had money and that allowed him to buy stuff and do things. And he did that until the money ran out.
It seems like it would be easy in a person's upbringing as the adults in this person's life to make an assumption that the future is going to look just like the present. And therefore, I mean, on the other end of things, you could imagine a wealthy family or a school where that's the demographic, not teaching kids how to do certain things for themselves based on an assumption that they're going to be able to pay someone to do that or they're not going to need that skill. Does it go both ways? And how can you avoid making certain assumptions? It's just human nature.
You know, I think that what you're touching on is kind of that recency effect, right? That kind of what I'm experiencing now or what I have recently experienced is going to continue forever. The human mind is wired that way. So that's kind of the way we are as beings. And so it's important to recognize that and then also try to combat that when you're in a situation that you think probably won't continue forever. But I think the concept of kind of the way you kind of think about money and the way you've been brought up and ultimately kind of translating that into kind of the way you make decisions later is I think as parents that's really where it starts and both modeling good behavior but also involving your kids in making decisions. I think so many times parents just make decisions and they kind of assume the kids will figure it out on their own and I've never understood that. So involving your kids when you have some of these conversations, difficult or fun, how to plan a vacation or how do we save more money for the car purchase? I think either way, getting the kids involved and using those life lessons to kind of train them on what you want them to learn is really, really valuable because they're not getting it at schools. And while there's certain programs that come in and do a really great job like Sophie's does, it's just not widely out there.
David, what can you tell us about this, about how assumptions that might have been made in a person's upbringing influence what skills that person brings to the table financially?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to, before I answer that question, just think about the professional ball players and the entertainers that are out there. And so many of them, you know, million-dollar contracts all of a sudden. They never had any money before, and all of a sudden they have these million-dollar contracts. And as Lucas says, when you're getting $1 million contract, you feel like you're going to be getting $1 million contracts for the rest of your life. And so it's so difficult to be thinking of planning for the future because you've got this right now that you're dealing with. And I was talking to this client of mine who's a judge now. And I was talking to him about saving for retirement before he became a judge when he was an attorney. And he said, you know what, the reason I'm not really focused on saving for retirement is because I can't think of anybody in my sphere that I know closely that is saved for retirement and is living off their nest egg. So that's, to me, that's a concept. It's not a reality because I can't see anybody doing it.
And you know, there's also this interesting thing of we're in this post-recession world where a lot of people's ideas and assumptions were just very recently shaken. Yes. And so maybe you have seen everyone in your life historically having this comfortable retirement, and now you see something very different. How thorough is the rewiring as far as you're concerned? Like, are people coming to you having just changed dramatically? One client came in 2007 and is just very different now, or is it not like that?
Well, it kind of is. So let's put it in perspective. So clients that experienced the 90s felt like the stock market was just, you know, free money. It's like you just throw money in there and it makes a bunch of money. And then clients who invested through the 2000s experienced 2008, 2009, and they think the stock market is a really, really risky place where you better be real careful if you're going to put your money in there because you could lose all your money. And neither one of those is true. You know, it's somewhere in between. And so, yeah, there is rewiring that we do have to do. We have to teach our young people whose only experience with investing is through the 2000s that, no, the stock market is the place that you're going to get good, real, long-term returns.
We had a call from Vince. He called us at 816-235-2888. He wasn't able to stay on the line, but he was curious about how financial tension affects people's money decisions, particularly college degrees and their attitudes toward college degrees. They wonder if people see those as either recreational, like as a sort of, because whether they they see that as something that is going to benefit them later, or whether they see that as a luxury for the wealthy, perhaps. Especially given, I think, numbers having to do with people leaving school with a lot of debt.
Yeah, I guess I don't know that I fully understand the question. So he asked about financial tensions having an impact on what choices they make in school or the decision to go to school?
I think to go to school, to invest in higher education, and whether they see that as a financial investment or as primarily an educational pursuit for its own sake.
Hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot being written on this right now about is a college degree still worth it just because of the increasing cost? Wages in the U.S. haven't really gone up over the last 5 years or 6 years or so. And so, yeah, and then there's a lot more student debt that folks are coming out with, so they're not experiencing the benefits of the degree that they've just earned. And so I think there's been a lot written there. I think if you look at the numbers, I think there's no question that it's a really good financial decision. But I think like so many things, there is such a big non-financial component to the decision to go to school, what career you choose, what career path and ultimately what you pursue. I think there is a financial tension there that is getting exasperated more given the high student debt that kids come out with these days.
Central Standard's got to take one more quick break. Money therapists, stay with me. And listeners, call 816-235-2888 to talk about how your childhood finances have shaped your behavior with money in unexpected ways. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today's Central Standard is all about how to adjust our most deeply held beliefs about money when faced with changing financial realities. With me in the studio are wealth managers Lucas Butchell and David Jackson. Hi, Lucas.
Hello.
And hi again, David.
Say, how you doing?
We're also joined by Sophie Archuleta. She teaches financial literacy in schools where she sees up close and personal how young people's ideas about money become hardwired early on, and she intervenes. Welcome back, Sophie.
Hello.
We were just talking to a caller about the cost of college and how your upbringing affects whether you see that as a good investment or not. And I wonder how that issue is approached in these modeling activities you do with young people where they're making decisions. Are they making decisions about whether to attend college?
No. So we are hitting them at when they're 26, hypothetically. And so we're assuming that they already went to college or made that choice. And they tell me what career field they want to be in. And based on we heavily rely on that GPA. So based on that GPA, we figure out, are they going to get that doctor salary or that MA salary? And then they get assigned student loans. So we're already kind of throwing that at them.
So the student loan is just an assumption.
Right. But one thing that I do see, so we have evaluations and we have students tell us about their experience with Reality U. And one thing that I see often, a question that we ask is there anything that you would change about your future after having been through Reality U? And I see a lot of, continuing education, going to college. And so Reality U is showing them, that's something that I think is going to be important, is going to college to get a good job.
Let's talk to Mitch in Independence. He's called us at 816-235-2888. Hi, Mitch.
Hi. Can I ask your panel a question about raising kids?
Please do.
Our family is doing well financially. We're able to give generously to our church and so forth. We're saving for the future. We try to teach our kids to use money responsibly. My question, though, is that we do almost all of our bill paying and financial lives. It's either done electronically. It's not done in hard currency. And though my kids have their own savings accounts, they really do not have a piggy bank, so to speak, other than maybe just some change. And I'm wondering if there's something, to the visual of seeing, some money accumulate in the piggy bank and then counting that and spending that money. Right now, when they want to buy something, we tell them, well, you're going to have to, pay for this, and they agree to that. But it comes out of an account that they never see hard currency, or very rarely.
That is such an
if that's the best process.
That is such an interesting observation, too. Thank you, Mitch. The idea that the learning process might not correlate very well with how adults use and spend and make money right now. I mean, you never touch it, quite possibly.
Yeah, that's a really good point because it's not tangible. And I think that is one of the ways to kind of reinforce that message. One of the things I would suggest, I'm not sure how old Mitch's kids are. Is he still on the line?
Yeah, Mitch, how old are your kids?
They are 10 and 12.
Okay. Do they have smartphones yet?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Do they have cell phones and smartphones yet?
They do not.
Okay. So one of the things I would suggest is you can set up online access for them. You can get them access to bank or savings accounts. And most banks these days will allow you to relabel your accounts. So if you want to allow your kids to see money accumulating or pooling, is connecting them and connecting the labels on certain accounts to what they're saving for or what they're trying to accomplish. So, you know, a good example would be if they've got if they're saving for a car or a trip, you could actually change the label on a savings account to the trip fund, and they can see that money accumulate there. It probably isn't exactly the same as seeing accumulate in a savings account, but I think connecting the online experience that they're going to have as young adults and as adults. And still trying to kind of reinforce that money is accumulating for something would be one way to do it.
And I'd also recommend, especially at that age, it's a really good age to open up maybe some type of an investment account for them, maybe a gift to minors account or something, where your money's invested and they can actually see, you can share with them their statements to see their money going up and down. So they start understanding, you know, you invest, there's risk in that. You can lose money sometimes, you make money sometimes. And they start understanding the effects of compound interest at an early age.
So that's interesting, too, because there are ways of making the dollars and cents concrete that don't rely on reverting to relationships with money that aren't realistic in our age.
Well, right. With both my boys, they had investment accounts in their youth, and now they're adults, and they believe in investing because they've seen it. I mean, it's not just a hypothetical. It's like, no, I had an investment account, and I know how it works, so I'm going to keep doing that. That's just their reality.
We've talked a lot about how parents shape kids' ideas about money, and I wonder if sometimes there are, like, multi-generation accumulation of tendencies. I guess I'm thinking specifically about myself having grown up around a lot of people who had either lived through the Great Depression or fled from the Holocaust. And that's not one generation ahead of me, but I think there were still lingering effects within the family in terms of just what that relationship with money is. And you can see that kind of more broadly, that people can be raised as much by their parents and grandparents' ideas as by the actual concrete financial realities they grew up with.
Well, let me address a cultural issue of being from the African-American community. This is the first generation of African-Americans who really have been involved in investing to any significant degree. And so what my experience is a lot of African-Americans who were successful tended to put their money in cars that you mentioned. You know, it's like, hey, I'm making good money. Let me buy a really, really nice car, and I'm going to show off the money I'm making as opposed to putting money in some type of investment and let my money appreciate for me, because they didn't have that background. They didn't have anybody, any role models to look at and say, hey, yeah, my uncle was a great investor, and so I should try to be like him. So, you know, that's been perpetuated throughout the years. And then I just saw a report just came out just the other day that the average net worth of an African-American household is about $11,000 versus that average white family has about $144,000. So that wealth gap has gotten even bigger. But a lot of it is a cultural thing. We just did not grow up understanding about investing and putting money in appreciable assets.
And a historical thing. I mean, history playing out in the little decisions you make with your money every single day. Lucas, do you see this?
Yeah, I do. And your example with your family is one. I have a coworker of mine that actually has had that exact experience. So through his parents and grandparents who were involved in the Holocaust, having some hard silver. And he learned this from his father that, when your money, when your currency isn't worth anything. So after World War I in Germany, when you go to buy bread or go to buy a necessity of life, you had to go scrape a little bit of silver off and actually to pay for that bread that you were going to take home and eat with your family. And so something like that kind of being wired and the power of a story like that and how that can influence somebody the way they make decisions today. but also an understanding of kind of where he and his family had come from. That's a really big thing, and I think you really hit on it, is that your upbringing and really the, even the broader family story, so the values that have been passed down, are really powerful experiences that can work for really good or kind of inhibit you from being able to achieve financial success when you become an adult.
I like thinking of that as the power of a story, that there's a little story that's kind of at the heart of how you make decisions in this realm. Sophie, do you try to tell a particular kind of story to the students you work with as you're really shaping their ideas, taking the raw material they've brought to you and been like, okay, but now I'm going to tell you a story about money?
You know, I think that it's more of, you know, here are some paragraphs, here are some sentences. I want you to write your own story. Let's just give you some starting points. What are some questions you should be asking? What are things you need to think about when it comes to your financial future? And so kind of giving them these bits and pieces so that they can make their own story and they can make these decisions.
When students have written a story that didn't quite work with that material, do they get upset? I mean,
they do. Yeah. We have students who we throw some life situations at them as well. So we have a chance booth where they can roll something good, something bad, and they have to work it into their budget. We have at the car insurance booth, they have to roll a dice for their driving record. And one thing, they could get a speeding ticket, and so then their premium goes up each month. They could get a DUI, which is something that you don't plan for. And they do. They get angry about their situation, about, well, I'm going to get a different job because the career that they had chose for the event, you know, didn't give them the money that they thought that they would be getting. They do.
How do you coach them to use that being upset in a really constructive way instead of just leaving terrified and like demoralized about their futures?
Yeah. So we highly encourage them that, you know, this isn't your future. You know, this is today. This is an event. So right now you have the choice to make changes in, you know, the way you handle money, the way you deal with money, and then also how you're doing in school right now. And so, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, the future is yours, is kind of the attitude that we're trying to present to them, because they do. It's up to them as to, you know, how they use that money and where they go from high school.
Do either of our financial advisors have like an inspirational story for us about someone who brought a certain set of assumptions and understandings and really like became empowered to make a change or understand something differently?
I have one. I have a client who inherited quite a bit of wealth, but her parents disagreed with the lifestyle choices that she made as an adult, and so there was a really conflict with the money because both of her parents were dead. She had these dollars that she was blessed with and really could do what she wanted in life. But there was a big guilt around that money because she knew her parents didn't agree with the choices she had made. And so she spent that money. So it was almost like, I want to get rid of this. Wow. And we really struggled with her trying to kind of, A, understand what was going on. I think once we kind of got to the bottom of it, trying to discuss that it wasn't about kind of offloading this money. And she spent the money down considerably, and ultimately it got to a point that I think she figured it out, and she thought, wow, this is a blessing that I've been left with, and ultimately was able to change her ways and really got on a great path that's going to meet her long-term goals.
We're out of time, so that's a wrap for this money therapy session. Sophie Archuleta of Reality U, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Lucas Butchell, thanks as always for being here and sharing that great story.
Absolutely.
David Jackson, it's been fun.
It is great being with you.
Lucas and David are both with us from the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City.
About everybody that was hanging out. Now you don't talk so loud. Now you don't seem so proud about having to be scrounging your next it feel complete unknown. Like a rolling stone.
To listen back to our conversation about the money scripts etched into our brains early in life, go to kcur.org/centralstandard later today. Sign up for a podcast while you're there. Tomorrow, an environmental scientist, an astrophysicist, and a film critic walk into a room. No, that's not a setup for a joke. It's a setup for a conversation about Interstellar, the movie. Tune in at 10. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date. Next.
You say you never compromise with a mystery tramp, but now you realize he's not selling any alibis as you stand to the vacuum of his eyes and say, do you want to?